Usually when we think about an ecosystem, we just we picture this quiet forest.
Right. Yeah, like a balanced habitat.
Exactly. But imagine a new apex predator just drops in overnight,
Yeah.
and it's hungry, it's growing incredibly fast, and suddenly all the animals at the bottom of the food chain are just fighting for scraps.
Oh, it completely upends the balance of power. I mean, it's disruptive, but historically, that kind of intense pressure is also the engine for rapid, chaotic evolution.
And that is exactly what we are seeing in the tech ecosystem right now.
Yeah.
Artificial intelligence is that apex predator, and it is actively devouring resources while, forcing some just incredible adaptations. So welcome to the deep dive.
Thanks for having me.
Today, we are unpacking a really fascinating stack of sources from the May 11, 2026 edition of Taken Knight. And honestly, we're jumping straight into the fallout here. Because if you are a PC builder right now, or just someone looking to upgrade your computer, the reality is looking pretty grim.
It really is.
We are seeing a complete collapse in the motherboard market.
Yeah, the industry is actually calling it the Rampocalypse, which is a bit dramatic, sure, but the numbers completely back it up.
Right.
We aren't just looking at a cyclical dip here. This is a structural failure in the consumer hardware supply chain.
The statistics from the sources are just sobering. I mean, ASUS sales are down 33%. Yeah, that is their worst year since they were founded back in 2008. ASRock is down 39%. And it all comes back to memory prices, right?
Exactly.
Just from January to May of this year, DDR5 memory prices are up 400%.
It's staggering.
And DDR4 is up 320%. So basically, a 32 gigabyte kit that would have cost you maybe 120 bucks back in January, that's now sitting anywhere from $480 to $600.
Which completely prices out the average consumer. I mean,
Yeah.
even AMD's CEO, Lisa Su, came out and warned of a 20 plus percent drop in gaming revenue for the second half of the year.
Just because average people simply cannot afford to build a system right now.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is the underlying mechanism, because it's really important to understand that this isn't like a shipping logistics hiccup.
Right, it's not boats stuck in a canal.
No. This price spike is entirely driven by the physical architecture of AI accelerators. Those massive data center GPUs from NVIDIA and other players, they don't use standard memory. They require something called HBM.
Right, high bandwidth memory. I've seen that term thrown around a lot. How is HBM actually different from the RAM that's, sitting in a desktop PC right now?
Well, it really comes down to density and speed. Instead of placing memory chips flat on a motherboard, like next to the processor, HBM actually stacks the memory dies vertically.
Like a skyscraper.
Yes, exactly like a skyscraper, right on top of each other. And then they place that stack directly on the GPU package itself. But to do that, memory giants like Samsung and Micron have to use this incredibly complex fabrication process.
Ah, so they have to choose what they make.
Right. They looked at the market, realized all the massive profit margins are in AI infrastructure, and physically retooled their production lines. They shifted away from consumer DRAM over to HBM.
Okay, let's unpack this. It's like, someone bought up all the flour in the world to make these fancy $1,000 wedding cakes, and now regular people can't even afford a basic loaf of bread.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. Because global manufacturing capacity is finite, In 2025, only 12% of global DRAM capacity went to HBM.
Okay.
But in 2026, that figure jumped to 23%.
Wow.
Yeah, nearly a quarter of all memory production on Earth is now dedicated exclusively to AI. System integrators are seeing 40% declines in custom builds because the consumer market is quite literally fighting for the scraps of manufacturing capacity that are left over.
So if you're listening to this right now and your motherboard just fried, I really feel for you because this raises a tough question. What do you actually do? Like, do you just bite the bullet and pay 600 bucks for RAM?
I mean, if you can avoid it, try to hold off on building a custom rig right now. The manufacturing bottleneck won't really ease up until Q1 of 2027.
That's a bit of a wait.
It is. But that is when new fabrication plants, specifically Samsung's massive $17 billion facility down in Texas, are scheduled to come online and flood the market with new capacity.
Okay, but what if your livelihood depends on having a working machine today and you just cannot wait?
Then you might have to abandon the DIY route temporarily.
You mean looking at the big pre-built vendors, right?
Correct. Look at massive vendors like Dell or HP. They operate on long-term, multi-year component contracts.
Oh, so they bought their RAM years ago.
Exactly. They locked in their memory prices long before this AI spike hit, so they are somewhat insulated. Alternatively, if you can stretch your current machine just a few more months, keep an eye out for Black Friday 2026.
Right, hoping for some deep discounts.
Retailers will be desperate to drive foot traffic, so they might offer some really aggressive loss leader deals on pre-builts.
It's just wild to think about consumer hardware being starved out like this.
Yeah.
But, you know, the flip side of this ecosystem shift is equally dramatic.
Oh, absolutely.
Because while average consumers can't get basic RAM, the data centers that are feeding this AI boom are forcing storage technology forward by, like, a decade.
Yeah, the pressure on enterprise infrastructure right now is immense. The data models are getting so large that standard hardware simply cannot physically load the information fast enough.
Which brings us to this absolute monster in our sources, the Micron 6600 ION PCIe 5.0 data center SSD.
It's unbelievable.
Our sources show this drive holds 245 terabytes.
Yeah.
Just on one single drive.
Yeah.
To put that into perspective for you listening. That is the entire text of the English Wikipedia, multiplied by 2,450 times, fitting into a slot the size of a ruler.
It's wild. It has exactly double the capacity of its nearest competitor from Solidigm.
How are they even doing that?
Well, it's a massive generational leap, and it's made possible by something called ninth generation G9 QLC NAND technology.
Okay, QLC stands for quad-level cell, right? So we are stacking data here too, just like the memory.
We are, yeah. In a standard solid-state drive, a tiny microscopic cell holds one piece of data, right? A zero or a one.
Right.
With QLC, the engineers have figured out how to reliably stack data four layers deep within every single individual cell.
That sounds incredibly delicate.
It is. It requires incredibly precise voltage regulation to read and write without corrupting the adjacent layers. And when you refine that architecture to its ninth generation, you get this mind-boggling density of 245 terabytes.
The density is amazing, but the economics here still really puzzle me. Analysts estimate this single drive costs $35,000 to $40,000.
Yep, that's the estimate.
Which works out to about $160 per terabyte. Now, standard traditional hard drives with the physical spinning disks, those are sitting at about $7 per terabyte. So, even with the space savings, why on earth would a data center pay a $40,000 premium per drive?
Because the sticker price of the drive is effectively irrelevant to a data center at that scale, they calculate the total cost of ownership, or TCO.
Okay, so factoring in everything else.
Right. You have to factor in the physical footprint, the massive air conditioning required to cool the servers, and the raw electricity. This Micron SSD takes up 82% less physical rack space than a comparable array of spinning hard drives.
82% less space. That's huge.
And its maximum power draw is just 30 watts. If you are building a massive 1 exabyte server farm, using these SSDs is 84 times more energy efficient than using mechanical drives.
Oh, okay. So they basically make the money back on their power bill.
They do, but the real financial driver is the AI training bottleneck. Let's look at a massive model like GPT-5. The training data set for that model is estimated to be over 50 petabytes of text, images, and data.
50 petabytes.
Exactly. If a data center uses traditional hard drives, those physical spinning disks take milliseconds to physically locate and fetch the data. But the incredibly expensive NVIDIA GPUs, they process data in nanoseconds.
Oh, so the $40,000 processor is just sitting there doing nothing, literally waiting for a mechanical needle to read a disk.
Exactly. The bottleneck isn't the processing power anymore, it's the data delivery. But with these new Micron drives, you could fit that entire 50 petabyte data set on just 204 drives, and they feed the GPUs instantaneously.
That's insane.
It cuts the actual training time of an AI model down from months to mere weeks. That saves tens of millions of dollars in compute time alone.
That makes total sense now. So the big question, when does this trickle down to the rest of us? Because managing storage on a modern gaming PC right now is an absolute nightmare.
Right. Well, the enterprise sector always subsidizes the research and development. So based on current manufacturing trends, we expect this high-density QLC technology to hit the consumer market around 2028 or 2030.
Okay, so not too far off.
Not at all. You will likely see 100 terabyte consumer SSDs become standard. The entire concept of, you know, deleting a video game to make room for a new update will just vanish.
I cannot wait for that. But Until those massive drives arrive, and while we are all still trapped in this RAM shortage, we really need a way to make our current machines run better today. And our sources show Microsoft just quietly released a really fascinating software band-aid to help ease this hardware crisis.
Yeah, they released a feature called Xbox Mode for Windows 11. It's included in the May 2026 updates, specifically versions 24H2 and 25H2.
I saw this, and initially, I'll be honest, I was super skeptical. Like, you enable it, and when you log in, your PC just looks like an Xbox dashboard.
Right.
But the performance claims are substantial. They benchmarked Cyberpunk 2077, and just by turning this mode on, the game jumps from 58 frames per second up to 64 frames per second.
It was a 7 to 10% performance boost purely from software.
Exactly. But I have to ask, isn't this just a rebranded Steam Big Picture mode?
No, actually, it is fundamentally different. Steam Big Picture is really just a user interface. It's a graphical shell running on top of your normal Windows operating system, so all your background apps are still running. Xbox Mode, however, is a total system state change. It operates at the kernel level.
So it's actually changing how the computer operates under the hood.
Considerably, yeah. When you activate Xbox Mode, Windows aggressively suspends its own telemetry.
Meaning it stops talking to Microsoft servers.
Exactly. It stops communicating in the background. It alters CPU scheduling, pushing your game thread to the absolute front of the line so no other app can interrupt the processor.
Oh, wow.
It optimizes storage input output to prevent stuttering, and it even reroutes your network traffic to give gaming packets quality of service priority.
So it just ruthlessly kills unnecessary background processes.
Yes, which actually frees up to 2 gigabytes of RAM.
Which is massive. 2 gigabytes of freed RAM is huge when you're stuck on a 16 gigabyte system and you literally can't afford to buy more memory right now.
And that's exactly why Microsoft deployed it. But, you know, it's also a highly strategic move in the broader hardware ecosystem. They are fighting the rise of handhelds like the Steam Deck, which uses a custom Linux operating system.
Right. They want to keep people on Windows.
Exactly. Microsoft is trying to prove that Windows can transform into a dedicated lockdown gaming environment without needing a custom OS.
So if you are listening and you want to try this out, it's a gradual rollout. So you might not see the toggle in your settings menu right away, but you can use a free open source utility called Vive Tool to force the update.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, the specific feature IDs you need to enable are 5898-9070 and 5976-5208. It's genuinely worth trying if you're feeling the hardware squeeze right now. And, you know, you can always just press Windows plus F11 to snap right back to your regular desktop.
It's just a very clever way to optimize the digital experience while the physical hardware catches up.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. But taking a step back here, it's interesting that Xbox Mode and the memory shortages are all about optimizing these digital environments inside our screens.
Right.
But if we look at the next major story in our stack, AI is clearly no longer content staying in the digital box. It is actively learning to navigate the physical world.
The real world application of this tech is accelerating so fast. I mean, look at Wave, this British startup. They just secured $1.05 billion in funding.
$1 billion?
Yeah, bringing their valuation to $8.6 billion.
And the backers are heavyweights too. SoftBank, NVIDIA, Microsoft. They're building something called embodied AI for autonomous vehicles. And they are preparing for a massive launch in London at the end of this year, 2026.
Right.
What caught my eye, though, is how different their technology is from the self-driving cars we already know.
It is a complete paradigm shift in how a machine interprets its surroundings.
The best way I can describe the difference to you guys listening is this. Think about how a company like Waymo operates. Their cars basically drive like a train on invisible digital tracks.
Exactly.
They rely on these hyper-detailed pre-programmed maps and a massive rulebook of code. Like, if you see a stop sign at these exact GPS coordinates, execute the braking sequence.
Right, very rigid.
But Wave doesn't do that at all. It uses end-to-end deep learning. It just observes the world through cameras and drives intuitively, much more like a human teenager would learn to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So why did these tech giants just throw $1 billion at this specific approach?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's all about the mechanism behind that end-to-end deep learning. In a traditional autonomous system, you have separate modules, right? One piece of software processes the camera feed.
Okay.
It hands that data to another module that plans a route, which then hands instructions to a third module that physically turns the steering wheel. Wave collapses all of that into one single neural network.
So the visual data goes in and the physical driving action comes out with no hard-coded rules in between.
Precisely. The AI has actually learned the physics of driving by watching millions of hours of human drivers. It understands implicitly that, if a bouncing ball rolls into the street, a child might be running right behind it.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Right, it doesn't need a specific line of code telling it to slow down for a ball. It has learned the spatial relationship and the required response naturally.
That is genuinely kind of unsettling, but also brilliant. I
Yeah.
imagine that makes it incredibly scalable.
Scalability is the entire point. A rule-based system requires billions of dollars in infrastructure and months of high-definition 3D mapping for every single new city it
Right,
enters.
because if a construction crew moves a stop sign 10 feet, the rule-based car might just freeze.
Exactly. But Wave System, because it relies on real-time visual comprehension, can theoretically be dropped into a completely unmapped city on the other side of the world and just drive.
It just looks at the road and figures it out.
Yes. They are aiming for level 4 autonomy, which means the car can handle all driving tasks under certain conditions without any human intervention. And if they can successfully navigate the absolute chaos of London traffic, the buses, the cyclists, the unpredictable rain, they can scale globally almost overnight. The projection from the industry is that because of this generalized embodied AI approach, 50% of all new cars will feature level 4 autonomy by 2030.
That is wild. It is amazing that an AI can learn the language of driving just by recognizing visual patterns. But what happens if we take that exact same pattern recognition power and point it at biology?
Then you step into the realm of interspecies communication, and this is where the underlying technology of AI truly feels revolutionary.
We are talking about Project CETI here. They took a transformer architecture, which, for context, is the exact same underlying mechanism that powers large language models like ChatGPT, and they fed it 8.7 million acoustic clicks recorded from sperm whales.
The model they built is called WAM. And the way a transformer architecture works is really crucial here. It doesn't just look for a one-to-one translation.
Right.
It analyzes the relationship between different elements in a sequence to derive context.
So it's looking at the entire sentence of clicks, not just a single sound. And the results they got are just staggering. They didn't just find noise, they discovered a sperm whale phonetic alphabet. It contains 156 distinct, repeatable click patterns. The AI proved that these whales actually have grammar, they have regional dialects. They even possess cultural transmission, meaning young whales are taught specific language structures by their elders.
The model even detected vowel-like spectral shifts, which means a whale can emit the exact same pattern of clicks, but slightly alter the tone or frequency to convey a different emotional context or urgency.
That's incredible.
It is an incredibly sophisticated method of communication.
It completely changes everything we thought we knew about animal intelligence. But so, what does this all mean? I have to clarify something here. We found their alphabet, and we know they have a complex language, but can we actually talk to them right now? Do we have a dictionary?
Not yet. We can read the structure of the language, but we don't have the semantic meaning. We don't know what the words actually translate to.
Yeah.
So the next phase, which the CETI team is executing right now, involves deploying autonomous underwater robots to follow whale pods for weeks at a time.
Ah, so they are trying to tie the sounds to specific action.
Exactly. The robot observes the environment. If a whale emits a very specific sequence of clicks, and suddenly the entire pod executes a coordinated dive to hunt squid, the AI logs that correlation.
Okay, I see.
Over millions of interactions, the transformer model will build a contextual dictionary mapping acoustic clicks to physical behaviors.
That is fascinating. So the goal is to achieve two-way communication by 2028. Like, we could theoretically have a robot emit a click pattern that warns a pod about a dangerous shipping lane, and the whales would actually understand the warning.
The implications are profound. And consider the broader scientific context here. This exact pattern recognition method is the template for SETI.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence.
Yes. If we can use AI to successfully decode a complex non-human language here on Earth, we are effectively beta testing the exact protocols we would use to decipher a signal from an alien civilization.
It's incredible to think that decoding whale songs might actually prepare us for first contact.
This really is.
So we've got AI bridging the gap between entirely different species. But to close out today's deep dive, we need to look at another massive crossover happening right now. Because it turns out, video game intellectual property is successfully bridging the gap between our computer screens and the global box office.
The entertainment landscape is undergoing a structural shift that really mirrors what we see in the tech hardware space. Video games are no longer a subculture, they are the foundation.
The numbers are undeniable. The newly released Super Mario Galaxy movie just crossed $941 million globally.
Almost a billion.
Yeah. It is officially the second highest grossing video game film of all time, sitting only behind the 2023 Mario movie, which pulled in $1.36 billion. Nintendo stocks surged 12% on the news, pushing their market cap to $75 billion. But for decades, Hollywood suffered from the curse of the bad video game movie. I mean, we're looking at you. Early Sonic designs and the Warcraft adaptation, they were historically terrible. So what changed?
What changed is control. In the past, game studios would simply license their IP to a Hollywood production company, and then the filmmakers would rewrite the lore, change the characters, and fundamentally misunderstand the mechanics of why the game was beloved in the first place.
Right.
Nintendo reversed that dynamic.
They partnered with Illumination Entertainment, the studio behind the Minions.
Yeah.
But Nintendo essentially acted as a co-producer, right?
Yeah, exactly. They kept a fiercely tight grip on the creative direction. They ensured the script was a one-to-one faithful translation of the source material.
Which fans loved.
Yes. They brought in fully orchestrated original music from the games and tacked every frame with details that only fans would recognize. They didn't try to reinvent Mario for a new audience. They just elevated the existing world onto a larger screen.
And by retaining that creative control, Nintendo really proved they are no longer just a hardware manufacturer or, you know, a software developer. They are a massive entertainment empire. They are methodically building a Marvel-style cinematic universe.
And they aren't slowing down. They've announced plans for 10 more films by 2030. We are looking at Zelda, Metroid, Donkey Kong.
It's going to be everywhere.
The financial success of the Mario franchise proved the viability of the model. The industry projection right now is that by 2030, an estimated 25% of all Hollywood tentpole releases will be direct video game adaptations.
Wow.
Gaming IP is officially the new prime source material for Hollywood.
Well, it's been a massive journey today.
Yeah.
You guys have seen how the sheer physical architecture of AI memory is starving the consumer PC market, forcing data centers to adopt these massive 245 terabyte SSDs just to keep up.
Yep.
We looked at Microsoft's clever Xbox mode software intervention, how autonomous vehicles from Wave are learning the physics of the real world, how we are decoding the language of sperm whales, and how gaming is literally conquering Hollywood.
The through line here is really about how rapidly new systems, whether it's a neural network or a corporate entertainment strategy, can adapt and scale in the physical world. But before we sign off, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over regarding Project CET.
The Whale Translation Project.
Yes. We discussed their goal of achieving two-way communication by 2028.
Right.
Well, if we hit that milestone and the AI definitively proves that sperm whales possess complex, transmittable languages, distinct dialects, and generational culture, what happens to our legal systems?
Oh, wow.
Right? If a whale can articulate a clear thought, a cultural tradition, or a specific grievance regarding ocean noise to us through an AI translator, could an intelligent, non-human species legally lay claim to their oceanic habitats?
That is heavy.
If we recognize their language, do we have to recognize their sovereignty? We might be looking at a completely new frontier of planetary rights.
That is a staggering thought. If AI is the apex predator of the digital ecosystem, it might be the exact tool that gives a voice back to the apex predators of the natural world. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning, keep exploring, and we will catch you next time.